Good evening, my fellow peeps around the world. It's Wednesday, October the 9th, 2019. Approximately 6:30 in the evening here in Seattle, Washington, but for those of you in our Lord's Queensley Navy of the massive crocodile, it's approximately 18:30 hours. This hour or so, or less than, is brought to you by Ballard Artisanal Condoms. Why buy your prophylactics, I mean your rubbers? Why buy the raincoat from some Texaco off of 405? Your girl will appreciate it. These artisanal condoms are made of 100% baby goat skin. Not very abrasive. Not very leak-proof. But very, very, very natural. So please, come on down to the Ballard Artisanal Condom Store. Thursday is a twofer special. Get two Ballard Artisanal Condoms made of baby goat skin. Get one of our brand new condom experiments made of 100% French Bulldog. Ballard Artisanal Condoms, while supplies last. Now, I have been thinking a lot about the whole central planning thing, and here's the thing, folks. A lot of people, especially in the liberty circles, will focus on communists, because communists are the most obvious dopes. In the great stupid game of crocodiles, and when I say crocodile, you know I mean government. The communists are the worst, but it's all pretty fucking bad. The thing about central planning is it implies something that is technically, probably mathematically impossible, and that is predicting the future state of information. I know, in 1928, when Joseph Stalin, the man of steel, set forth the first five-year plan, I know they believed in the Soviet Union they could predict how many tractors they would need in 1932. But they were wrong. And what's worse is that they ran out of food. And I don't want to go into the Ukrainian Holocaust. I don't want to talk about that. Keep in mind, Stalin was Georgian, not Russian. And he killed a shitload of Russians. So if you're a Ukrainian and you have issues over the Holomor, the starvation of millions of Ukrainians, you should hate Georgians, just as a matter of historical fucking fact. But not that people should be consistent or intelligent about their hate. Central planning is impossible. It's not just that it's bad. It's not just that it harms people, but it's impossible. But here's kind of the worst part about it. And I think I'm going to call this trimming the bonsai. In the best case scenario with central planning, with any type of central planning, whether it's the Federal Reserve, whether it's Nazi Germany, whether it's the Soviet Union, Venezuela today, or fucking China today, because China is a centrally planned economy. If you don't think it is, man, you're living in a fucking doofus paradise. Okay? The central planned economy is technically impossible. It's highly inefficient. But what they do to make it work is they trim the bonsai. You see, that's the thing. You can't predict how many tractors you're going to need in 1933, in 1928. It's just not possible. But what you can do is steal some of the food from the farmers. And then once you're done stealing the food, you can kill a few farmers. And that's how you make the number of tractors and the number of farmers add up. It's called trimming the bonsai. Our own society does the same thing, because whether you like it or not, with the Federal Reserve, we are a planned economy. Yeah, I know. We don't predict how many tractors we're going to need in 4 or 5 years. But we do something just as bad. We believe we know the value of money, the value of that thing that returns the value of your daily work, the container of your daily work. If you want to think of it that way, the Federal Reserve believes that it knows the value on any given day of your work. So when it adjusts the interest rates at the federal level, it's not just doing things to banks, it's doing things to you. When it goes through a massive bond purchasing program, it's not just doing things for banks, okay? This is what's important. It's not just helping friends, okay? It's not just bankers helping bankers. It's also the Federal Reserve fucking you up the butt, trimming the bonsai. As one person once quipped regarding the Great Depression, it deals with something called the forgotten man. Or woman, if you don't want to be all gender-centric or cisgender, I don't give a fuck. Nobody cares about the forgotten man. Nobody cares about the people, for example, who bought silver and gold. There were people in 2009 who bought physical silver and physical gold. It does not matter that their investment, according to basic math, was 100% correct. They made a mistake. They believed they lived in a free country. They believed they lived in a free market. They were wrong. J.P. Morgan just got a speeding ticket for fixing silver prices. Okay, they got a speeding ticket. That's essentially what they just got. So yeah, when the Federal Reserve picks an interest rate, it's not just doing some nice things for some of the most crooked people that ever lived. It's also harming you. It's impacting your job, your value, your work, your retirement, everything. And I don't know, if you flip homes, if you're out there flipping homes, then maybe you're all excited about this because, hey, it did enable a massive home flipping economy. But there was no way that was ever going to last. I mean, what did you all think? We would all basically be a society of people who are selling homes to each other? Was that the utopia you dreamed of? Did you even remotely think that was fucking possible? Are you that fucking stupid? That's my question. Did you really believe we would become a Home Depot economy? Because that's never going to fucking happen. This was a financial scheme, again, created by the Federal Reserve and, frankly, the federal government with Fannie and Freddie. That's the thing, folks. Central planning is terrible for all sorts of reasons. It's incredibly stupid. It is impossible. One could argue that the church Turing hypothesis, having to do with the halting problem, and certainly other theories that have to do with the question of the calculation problem in economics, one could argue that it is almost provably the case that central planning is impossible. In fact, if central planning were possible, as a matter of topological mapping in the problem space of interesting problems, if you could solve the problem of calculating future demand, then guess what? You also have the algorithm for the perfect operating system. You should go out and make billions. If you're this fucker, you just got done listening to fucking Zeitgeist or something else about that fucking French-sounding dude who talks about how fucking ERP is the path to fucking utopian communism. Like, we're all going to plug into SAP or something. I don't know. Here's the deal, folks. That's not reality. But if you actually had the solution like that, if you actually could solve the calculation problem, then yeah, you've also solved the operating system problem. You have figured out a way to build a fucking operating system that can predict how much memory and how much RAM every process will need in the future. Guess what? These are the same families of problems. And since I know for a fact nobody has solved the operating system problem, there is no such thing as an operating system that knows exactly how many resources a process will need in the future. Since I know that is a matter of fact, I also know that your communism will never fucking work. But that also implies the fucking shit we have, which is just another shitty kind of communism. The difference is our communism is mainly for the rich. Which is, yeah, kind of makes it shittier. Not that any kind of communism is good. Next topic. I tell you, one of my fears, and this came up in the autumn of 2014, just after I left Seattle, just after I ended up in Indianapolis working for an accounting company that reminded me of Wolfram and Hart from the spin-off series Angel. And yeah, it's pathetic that I watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I know. But back in October of 2014, roughly the same time of year as now, I guess 5 years ago, I was in Indianapolis, and I was working for a company that was quote-unquote a good company. I had a good job. I was making good money. And my life was just as empty then as it is today as it was ever. I mean, there was nothing extra there. It was just a lot of bullshit. And I remember thinking that I would be at this company north of 96th Street or around about there in Indianapolis in the safe zone on day zero. And I would be surrounded by people looking at me, crying and bawling and bawling and crying and shaking and saying, why didn't anybody say anything? Why didn't anybody tell me? Why didn't anybody warn us? Dan, why didn't you tell me that the Federal Reserve was bullshit? Dan, why didn't you tell me that boiling water reactors are basically just dangerous as fuck? Dan, why didn't you tell me that complexity's a bad thing? I had a new age computer science teacher. She told me complexity was special. I don't want to be around normies on day zero. I don't want to be around people at an accounting company in Indianapolis who believe that the north of 96th Street reality of fancified sidewalks that are 10 feet wide and brand new little streets in Carmel. I don't want to be around that shit. And here's another thing too. Once I got to Indianapolis in 2014, I realized something that I knew. I knew in my heart on the train ride there. It's all shit everywhere now, folks. The pod people are everywhere. The first thing I fucking saw when I was in Indianapolis in 2014 were the fucking Agenda 21 bike lanes. What the fuck? These things do nothing but cause problems. They cause traffic jams. They increase the amount of shit we put into the fucking air. And yeah, I hate to break it to you, but even bikers need air to breathe. Although a lot of bikers are that fucking stupid. They don't even understand that. Although I'd love to meet the idiotic biker who loves the traffic jams and then claims he's a breatharian. That would be the most absurd conversation I could have this fucking month. And I said this month, because that's how fucked up things are getting. I don't want to have to hold anybody's hand. I don't want to have to be friendly or nice. I really don't. I know the Lord in heaven wants me to be kind. I know the Lord in heaven wants me to look at my fellow man and say, it'll be okay. It'll be okay. And guess what? If people honestly try to seek help from me, I can't help but try. It is part of my nature. I'm a sucker. I may come off as a dick or an asshole, but truthfully these days, that's a shield I carry. Because I'm a sucker. It's why I don't want to be around. It's why I don't want to be at Microsoft on day zero, surrounded by a bunch of very disconnected, discombobulated, fucking denial, anger, bargaining, finite state machines. These people will be nothing but fucking crazy. Okay? They will be nothing but fucking crazy on day zero. Don't mind me. I'm just editing something here really quick because I'm doing my podcast. Whatever the fuck that means. Yeah. Why are you working during your podcast, Dan? Because I'm trying to, well, not so much multitask, but I don't know. I know some people out there have to embrace normal values, the normie world, because they're parents, because they have kids, and I get it. If I were a parent today, I would be on the denial, anger, bargaining, turning circle too, and I would be going in circles too. I would be looking for every fucking excuse I could find to convince myself that this fucking wretched, way past its shelf life, nasty-ass imperial paradigm will continue. I mean, it shouldn't continue. It's murdering people. It's murdering nature. Our broken, Keynesian, debt-driven bullshit engine is chewing up liberty and chewing up nature. That's no fucking accident. And yet, it's still here. So, I don't want to be there. I don't want to be holding your hand. I am being honest. If you're one of these people that would sit and have lunch with me over the past decade and tell me about your Bitcoin and your smart device and all the app projects you're working on for the iPhone, if you're one of these people who tried to convince me that there was still some Jetsons future to come, I'm 50 fucking years old. If there was a Jetsons future to come, it would have been hot and heavy 20 years ago. It would have already been coming by now. I can tell you that on day zero, and I don't know when day zero is, although arguably you could say that day zero is every day now. In a way, every day has been day zero for about 10 years. But on day zero, there are going to be people walking around Seattle, pulling their hair out, wondering why their phone doesn't work, wondering why the electricity was cut off, wondering why the water doesn't work, wondering why the garbage is piling up. You will be, and I'm not saying you, because if you listen to my podcast with any regularity, and so you know if my voice sounds weird, just as a side note, I'm still feeling kind of sick. I think I got the Gumbus 38. I think I got a virus last night. Let's discuss that really quick before we continue about day zero and normie bullshit. Last night I decided to go out looking for chicks. I went up to Broadway. I went down to Slade's Drinky Bar. Slade's Drinky Bar is not far from, you know, Jefferson Street. It's a little hole in the wall. But a lot of really beautiful women hang out there. And when I say beautiful, I mean women I can get. And when I say women, check for the Adam's apple first, baby. Hey, honey, you want to go back to my place in Little Saigon? Oh yeah, baby, I got all kinds of tools. Hey, baby, come back to Little Saigon and I'll show you the magic. I'll show you the power of my man rod. And so I went out looking for love, and I found a little love, but on my way back to reality, I caught a little virus. I'll tell you, the love you find on Broadway in Seattle is a special kind of love. It's a love covered in a film or a residue. Also known as the bitter taste of sin. Love on Broadway in Seattle is filled with a perfume of sadness. Love on Broadway in Seattle is filled with Gumba's grease and Gronkus Lord fire. So I got a little virus because I fell in love. And yeah, that's the moral of the story. Do you remember? So, anyways, as far as the normie stuff goes, I'm just gonna try to end it on this note. I don't know what's going to happen. Neither do you. The only person that really knows what's going to happen next is God. Now, that's if you believe in God. If you don't believe in God, then you are simply left with a giant donut. We are in a region of temporal space, as far as the human race goes, that is so unstable that you could argue, from a mathematical perspective, that the likelihood of prediction is zero. Which means that, yeah, you can make good guesses, and you can try to tell me, Dan, I know the future, I know the Bitcoin future, I know the crypto paradise, come to Galt's Gulch. You might know, you might believe that. And if you're right, great. I simply want to live in a free world, but for the most part, that's denied. And what I can say is this, when empires crash, there's usually more space for freedom. When the Soviet Union collapsed, that opened up space for freedom. Did that lead to an anarchist free republic? No. But it's certainly the case that Russia and a lot of the former Soviet states are more free today than they were under communism. Now, I don't like the way the world works right now. I don't like the central bank bullshit. It is its own special kind of fucking communism. But it is what it is, and I can tell you it's not going to last. So, there will come a day, folks, when people will look at you, angry people will look at you and say, why didn't you say something? And you and I both know that a lot of us have been screaming at the top of our fucking lungs, despite the censorship, despite the attacks, despite the fact that we are vilified. We have been trying to tell people that shit ain't working for a while now, and nobody fucking listens. Now, I can tell you, if you tell people that on day zero, the most likely outcome will be a violent attack. Because God forbid you tell people that they're full of shit. God forbid you tell them that the destruction, the disaster, the pain, the chaos, all the crap that's falling on their head, the violent gangs, the thug armies, the fact that, yeah, if you're a woman, things are going to be very, very dangerous for you. Because the cops are not going to work. They'll be that you can dial 911 if you can find the electricity. Another way to fucking put it. If you confront any of these people on day zero while they're in the midst of their denial, anger, bargaining, madness, the most likely outcome is going to be a punch in the face or a knife to the chest. Or a bullet. Because God forbid you tell people that they themselves are the architects of their own doom. Next topic, stress tests, bank stress tests. And we love this topic. You know why? Because, you know, because of this amazing economic recovery we've had for the last 10 years, and it really has been fucking amazing, all of this low unemployment that sort of magically started happening in 2012 when people were written out of the human race. It turns out that when you're trimming the bonsai, and this is a good example just to sort of connect this podcast, the fucking stress tests and what they used to call it back in 2012, 2013, something Friday. Anyways, Yeah. Anyways, you know, every Friday when they would show you the list of banks that were being merged and collected up and were basically not liquid. Yeah, anyways, back then when we found out that all of a sudden the economy magically healed back in 2012. Bank stress tests. We were told, especially after Dodd-Frank was passed, and with Timothy Geithner and the stress tests and with Bernanke and all that bullshit, we were told that the banks were 100% safe, 100% capitalized, 100%, you know, capable of withstanding any storm. That's what we were told. We were told when Janet Yellen began raising rates in 2015 that everything was fine. That's what we were told 4 years ago. We could start raising rates and everything would be okay. And yeah, everything would be fucking fine. But that might have been bullshit, folks. That might have been total fucking bullshit. That might have been a lie. For the last few weeks, a very strange kind of banking operation has been going on every morning. It's called repo operations. And essentially, the Federal Reserve, as I understand it, makes available money, okay, that banks can essentially get access to. They can trade mortgage-backed securities, they can trade treasuries. The point is, in some ways, it's like quantitative easing. The Federal Reserve, you know, essentially takes the mortgage-backed security or takes the treasury and then provides liquidity. That's how I understand the repo operations. Now, what that means is there are banks out there right now that are so illiquid, that have so many demands and not enough credit to pay for the demands, that they need extra money from the feds. That's reality, folks. That's the truth of the stress test. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning the stress test is it's funny, and this goes back to a story I've told, but in 1997, I participated in a computer-based war game in Korea. And it was a, you know, combined arms war game. It involved Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force. It essentially involved a fairly large chunk of the officers of the United States military around the world, but specifically those focused on the Korea theater. And this included Allied officers. So it was a big war game, mainly focused on the what if there's a war on the Korean Peninsula scenario. And I've gone into it before, so I won't say more. But here's the thing. On day one of that game, it was canceled. It was stopped. It was frozen. We were all told, go get some beer, go get some food, come back tomorrow. And why did that happen? Because some clever reserve naval officer playing the game, according to the game's rules, sunk a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier. And God forbid you have bad optics under Clinton. God forbid you tell the truth. God forbid you know what the meaning of the word is. Like, is not ready to go to war. Anyways, instead of accepting this, because that's the way war games are supposed to work, you don't design war games so you keep playing them until you get the result you want. You design war games to test the plan. So you don't reset the game because somebody sunk your aircraft carrier. That's called being a spoiled sport. That's called being a fucking pussy. Now, how does this relate to the stress test? Because this is all the same disease, folks. There is a belief amongst many people in the world of normality that there are people in charge for which two things are true. One is that they're competent. They're highly competent. They're good at what they do. The other assumption people make is that they care about us, that they care about doing the right thing. Neither of those things is true when it comes to the Federal Reserve. Neither of those things is true when it comes to the federal government. Neither of those things is true when it comes to these so-called stress tests that all these banks passed under Geithner. I mean, we all remember it. We all remember the fucking stress test. You know, Bank of America got a stress test. Deutsche Bank got some kind of stress test. They all got stress tests. Geithner told us all the banks were 100% okay. I guess they were only okay for about 4 or 5 years. And if that's what you get for lots and lots of Federal Reserve debt, 4 or 5 years of quasi-stability, that's a pretty bad shit deal. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I think there's this belief that there's somebody in charge that cares for us and somebody in charge that knows what they're doing. But what if both of those statements is basically false? What if the people that run these banks are basically sociopaths? And as far as their competence goes, all I can say is this. They are very competent at being grifters, at being con artists, at being thieves. They're extremely good at thievery. But if you're thinking their competence relates to preventing our economy from crashing, no, it doesn't. Next topic. This should be a lighter topic. This has to do with French bulldogs. And specifically Beans. And if you don't know who Beans is a French bulldog that my sister owns. Though I don't know that the French bulldog is so much owned as coupled with a human. As you all know, every Halloween, former owners of French bulldogs lying dead in the cemetery with eggs planted in their stomachs, eggs planted there by French bulldogs they once owned but have since returned to the fucking sea. Every Halloween, those eggs hatch and little French bulldogs rise up through the earth like little howling cicadas. Anyways, with respect to Beans, the French bulldog, because we've discussed the life cycle of French bulldogs before, and I feel like, you know, we don't have to revisit that. Beans has a problem, and I think this may be common to French bulldogs in general. So if you own a French bulldog, this next topic's kind of a pro tip. It may sound stupid, it may sound irrelevant, but you'll understand if you own a French bulldog. Beans, because he doesn't have parents at home, you know, owners at home during the day, gets really crazy by 5 p.m. And if you own a French bulldog and you have to work a job, because let's get real, French bulldogs are expensive as fuck, so you have to work a job. When you get home, you might find that your French bulldog is really crazy. And this is understandable. Because of the design of the French bulldog, because it's not really a fully developed proper dog, but more like an embryonic dog that was aborted like halfway through the cycle. Because of this, they're constantly in a state of rage, or at least very near so, until they're tired and they fall asleep. You can imagine it, like imagine a baby has colic their whole life. That's essentially a French bulldog. So anyways, the French bulldog gets crazy and testy and wild around 5 or 6 p.m., depending upon where you live. Demon radio turns on, and that little fucker is insane. So what's to do? Now, you could say, well, Dan, you can play fetch. And with a normal dog, that seems simple enough. The problem is, whereas Beans, the French bulldog, loves to play fetch, he doesn't know how to give it up. Like, he'll go get it, and then he'll hold it in his mouth, and then he thinks it's a game to slobber and slobber and slobber all over the nugget until finally you trick him to give it to you. It's bullshit. Here's a solution. You need to have two things. Okay, if you're playing fetch with a French bulldog, don't have one item. You need at least two. One item's for throwing. One item is the item that the French bulldog has in its mouth that it will put down when it sees you throw the other item. And there you go. You can play fetch with your French bulldog all the live long day. And you won't have to get all that nasty slobber all over you, because guess what? It won't have time to slobber that much. It'll be dropping the item out of its fucking mouth. Instead of playing tug-of-war all goddamn day as the greasy slime from its lips drips onto your fucking sofa and starts burning a hole through it. Because yeah, French bulldogs have concentrated acid for blood. That may not seem profound, but it is a trick. If you play fetch with a French bulldog and you only have one item, like for example, a rubbery hippo, and you only use that hippo, it will become a slobbergus, it will become disgusting as fuck, and you will not enjoy yourself. And frankly, neither will the French bulldog. But if you have two items, and who knows, three, and if you have two people, who knows, three people, all of a sudden, you've got that little French bulldog cornered. He's playing fetch. He's kind of liking it. And so are you. And that's how you find peace with your Frenchie. Next topic. Actually, you know what? As far as time goes, I think this is the last topic. I'm going to make an edit because I think I'm going to move a topic someplace. Sometimes I do that, folks. Sometimes I do that. It's my nature. I make little edits. You know, little edits to the program. What are you going to do to me? What are you going to do to me? Okay? So before I go, I want you guys to know something. Even though I often get angry and crazy and I say things that make it sound like I have a cold heart, that's not actually true. I'm emphasizing this because I mentioned this earlier. There won't be a day. Okay, when I say day zero, I think a lot of people get the wrong idea. We're probably, living day zero right now if we didn't spend so much time looking at our smart devices. We'd realize what's going on around us. I don't know what happens next, but if you ask me, is the ground moving underneath our feet? Yeah. Fits and starts, little moves here, little moves there. But the ground is moving. And so if you're not careful, if you're not thinking about what you're doing, you could very well get swallowed up. We are in a state of cultural tectonic shift. We are on the verge of a paradigm shift, the great discontinuity. Not the first time this has happened in history. You know, these things happen every few hundred years. They really do. And it's not necessarily the end of the world. But here's the thing, though, folks. Some people's worlds will end. You know, if you believe in the central bank paradigm of money printing and Keynesian bullshit and pulling forward several hundred years of economic demand, if you believe in that infinite growth bullshit, if you believe you can have a billion Bengal tigers in India, your world is about to end, okay? There's not going to be a billion Bengal tigers in India. There's not going to be a billion people in Texas. That belief that that's going to happen is a load of horse shit. It can't happen. The numbers don't add up. It's probably worse than that, too. We probably so fucked up our ecosystems, mostly due to Norman Borlaug's Green Revolution. Thank you for the glyphosate, Norman. We've so fucked up our ecosystems that it's going to be hard to even settle on something, assuming there's something to settle on after everything begins to shift for us. So here's the thing, folks. I don't know what the future brings. I don't know what the future brings. I don't know what your future holds. But I do think, despite all my bullshit, we have to be kind. I'm going to contradict myself a little. I'm going to tell you something before I go that's going to contradict something I said earlier about not wanting to be around people. And it's not as much a contradiction as a clarification, maybe. I don't want to be around people who are going through their Kubler-Ross stages on day zero, because I know it's going to be painful, because I went through mine, most of mine, I think. I went through most of it many, many years ago. I certainly went through it after my divorce. And there are a lot of people out there right now who are coming to realize that this post-World War II reality of magical stuff that we keep buying at the store with magical money, all this is coming to an end. Now, I don't know what comes next, but I can tell you that shit is coming to an end. And what I would say before I go is that maybe we have to be kind. If you believe in liberty, maybe you have to be a mentor. If you believe that people can voluntarily cooperate and work together, maybe your job is to be a leader. I didn't say ruler. There's a big difference. Leaders don't need fear or force. People follow leaders because they want to, and they can choose not to follow. That's also the nature of leadership. Leadership is not about coercion. Leadership is not about putting people in compounds. Leadership is about working with other people in a way that improves the situation for everybody. Not perfectly, but better. But ultimately, leadership is only meaningful in a free society. On day zero, some of you are going to be, no, excuse me, not going to be. On day zero, some of you are going to have to be leaders. You'll have no choice, or at least it'll be the following. You will have no choice, and people will need you. And so I guess what I'm asking is to ignore my anger and my general negativity towards the normies on day zero, because we've all been there. We've all gone through those stages before. Let's all try to embrace a kind of constructive kindness. I'm not saying engage on day zero literally, because I'll tell you this too. It might be a good idea for a lot of people just to hang out for a few days, because the crazy is going to happen. There's going to be madness. And some people will simply go crazy and there will be no way back. And the real truth is, they were already there before Day Zero. It's just that this make-believe world kept them kind of in check. Anyways, before I go, I've had people tell me I should do this. I'm going to keep doing this. I have a Venmo link on my podcast, on my homepage. I would love to make money until the end doing this, but to do so, I would essentially have to make about, I don't know, $2,000 a month. I am nowhere near having enough listeners to even do that. So if you have money and you want to donate, feel free. But please do not donate if you don't have the money, and please do not donate if there's somebody else in your life who needs it more than me. Okay, kind of like on the airplane when they tell you, put on your oxygen mask first. That's my request. But if you have money, and you already have your oxygen mask on, and you've already helped people you care about, and you have just extra money that's burning a hole in your pocket, and you enjoy my podcast, I sure as shit could use the donation. So I have a Venmo link on my SoundCloud homepage, and I'll probably, from now on, try to include that link in all my posts. So for this Wednesday, October the 9th, 2019, go forth, my fellow human beings. Go out into the night and greet the night as a wild banshee. Go out into the night and greet the night as if you're a tiger cat. Go out into the night as if you're half French bulldog. And half scorpion. And good night. And who knows, I may do another podcast because I'm not feeling well, and as counterintuitive as this sounds, I think doing the podcast is draining me of phlegm and limbic sauces, the various greases that I poop out. In fact, I find that I'm mostly melting now. Mostly melting, like the witch in Wizard of Oz. So good night.